Red Eye is a program of alternative politics and culture which broadcasts live from 9 until noon every Saturday morning on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM and around the world at cooperadio.org. I'm Jane Williams. The first thing that happens in the play is that you come out on the stage and you say that the play is a work of fiction and that it doesn't reenact any series of events and any similarities are coincidental. Why did you decide to start the play like that?
The real reason that we decided to start the play like that is because it is based on a completely real event. And the rapist that we refer to in the play is a psychopath who would very, very gladly sue us if he could. So that stops him from being able to do that. So that's the reason.
The play focuses on the sexual and romantic energies of the main character, Carmen, starting from a very early age. And there's a wonderful scene that takes place when she's four and she's in love with Manuel. Who is Manuel?
Well, Manuel is a guy who actually existed. And he was a vendor of pots and pans at the market in Valdivia, which is where we were living at the time in Chile. And he was like my first big kind of love, right? And of course he had no idea that I even existed. Well, I think he figured out I existed, but let's just say it wasn't a mutual love because he was 14 and I was 4. So that story was much longer in the original and in earlier drafts of the play, and we had to shorten it, of course, just, you know, as always, you edit stuff. But the end of that story is that right after the coup happened in Chile and our house was raided, he stepped up to the plate and tried to defend us, and he was beaten very badly by the military for doing that. So that was the end of that love story, which I thought was a beautiful act on his part.
When we meet Carmen again, and she's grown up some more, we meet her just before the rape, and her romantic imagination reflects both her upbringing as the daughter of Chilean revolutionaries, but also her life as a Canadian teenager. How different are those two fantasy worlds?
Well, they're completely different because the fantasy of the, you know, of meeting a revolutionary man and marrying him and being declared the president of the revolutionary nations of Latin America was actually not a fantasy, really. Like, it was definitely a possibility. I mean, not the whole thing about being the president of the revolutionary nations, but the fantasy of taking part in a revolution and having a partner who was a revolutionary was actually very reality-based because, as you said, I did come from a revolutionary family. I mean, the other thing about, you know, Scott Baio and Christopher Atkins and all the quote-unquote sex symbols of the time, of course, is completely based in fantasy.
Now, you even have a different name for yourself at that point. Mm-hmm. You pick this quintessential North American name.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and of course, I mean, and that name is Marcia, which is from the Brady Bunch, right? I'm assuming it's still the same, right? You know, as a visible minority, as an ESL person, as a person who, you know, we came from a refugee family, we had no money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In 1981, you just really wanted to fit in, right? No matter what it took, right? So if that meant changing your name, you changed your name. And that's actually based in reality. Like, I never changed my name, but there were other Chilean kids who actually changed their names, and their parents had no idea.
The rape happens in the university endowment lands. And the girl is with her cousin, Macarena, and the rapist has a gun and threatens to kill Macarena, and Carmen submits to the rape to save her cousin's life. How does this, twist or this fact affect their experience of the rape?
Well, I think that in the case of the Macarena character, she feels so guilty about doing that, And because she's only 12 and the Carmen character is only 13, they don't have, they're not adults. So they actually do blame themselves. Because there was also, in reality, we were subjected to psychological torture for 3 hours before the actual rape happened. The Macarena character blames herself and consequently becomes an addict, right? A drug addict, an alcoholic. And really feels like she has no idea why this rape has affected her so badly, because she believes that she hasn't been raped. Because, sure, physically she hasn't, but, you know, in every other way she has been. So, and then the Carmen character feels guilty because she's older and they were being, quote unquote, bad, right? They had stolen a cigarette and had gone into the woods to smoke it, and we're talking about sex at the time, et cetera, when it all happened. So they both feel guilty, I guess, for different reasons, and it affects them both in very different ways.
And in a sense, the Macarena character gets a lot less support. She's just sent home from the hospital. No, she doesn't even go to the hospital. She's just sent home.
Yes, that's right. She's just told to make her statement, and then she's sent home, and that's it. That's completely it. And all the attention, as it were, is put on the Carmen character, right? She's the one that gets taken to the hospital. She's the one that people always refer to her as being the victim, right? Not both of them, yeah.
How does Carmen's family background influence the way that she processes or deals with the rape?
The family background, the way that it... interestingly enough, I mean, it's never spoken of again, which is very common in most families when this kind of thing happens. The difference with you know, a mainstream family and this one is that in this one you never speak about it again, because that would be considered being self-indulgent, right? In other words, they're not Victorian, right? So it would be considered self-indulgent and not revolutionary. Right? Like, even as a revolutionary, if you're tortured, if you talk about that, you're being self-indulgent, right? So that is a very old school way of looking at being a revolutionary. And I know that in this day and age, there's a lot of discussion going on around the world about the complete, how unhealthy that is, not only individually, but for a whole movement, right? But at that time, that was fully, fully in place. You know, you do not talk about yourself, because that would mean feeling sorry for yourself, right? And that is it, period, end of story.
And Carmen compares herself to revolutionaries who were tortured and says essentially, this is not suffering.
Exactly, exactly, especially because it's not a torture and a rape that occurred for political reasons. So that would make it even more politically incorrect to, in quote unquote, indulge in it. Yeah.
Carmen talks in the play about her family, how her family brought her up to feel that she had choices and could control her sexuality and her sexual life. And this then becomes a very painful irony in the context of the rape. But I'm wondering how you see that her feeling of control that she's brought up with, and then this loss of control.
Mm-hmm. It's a good question, because, at least the way the Carmen character was brought up, which is obviously based on myself, that you could possibly fall into these situations, and you were fully prepared to fall into these situations as a revolutionary in the midst of a revolutionary struggle. It was not ever discussed that you could possibly fall into a situation of torture and rape for no apparent reason, right? Which is complete loss of control. So that's where the character is completely confused. Like, I think that if she had been tortured and raped in the midst, even at that age, in the midst of her house being raided by the military, she could at least slot it somewhere in her brain. But this had nowhere where she could slot it. So in other words, yeah, complete loss of control on every level, not knowing what to do with this kind of an act, which is seemingly apolitical, which again is open to discussion. Like, you know, crimes and violence against women, of course, as far as I'm concerned, is a political crime. But yeah, certainly at that time in that family, there was nowhere to put a crime like that.
I guess what I was wondering was the extent to which the way that she is brought up then gives her, I mean, she comes out of it and she doesn't fall apart. She doesn't become an addict. She's a very good student. She carries on with her life. Now, does that come from that same kind of sense that she was brought up with of you are in control of your life?
Yes, I think that it does come from that. And it also comes from, I mean, personally, I do come from a very strong line of women historically. The women in my family on the paternal side and on the maternal side, the way they dealt, have always dealt with hardship, and I'm talking hardship here, has been through being overachievers, not giving in to addictions or to, you know, self-pity, and just plowing through, right? And I mean, in a historical context, right, I come from, for example, not that far back, you know, in terms of my grandmother on my maternal side, there were 13 children, only 5 of them made it to adulthood, for example. And on my paternal grandmother's side, same thing, you know, same kinds of stories. And this is not, these are women I met and who raised me. These are not like great, 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 great grandmothers, right? So, yeah, it's also, I also took their example. You know, I actually remember taking their example when I was that age after this happened. Yeah.
I want to ask you about a little bit about the staging of the play. The set is very simple, but you have a couple of elements that are quite unusual. There's a trapeze on stage. What was it about the trapeze that appealed to you?
Yeah, the trapeze was always part of the script, and basically, it symbolizes dissociation. It symbolizes leaving your body, and that's the main symbol that we're using with it. Yeah.
The other element, which I can only describe as looking like a kind of a sound booth. There's a box at the back of the stage, which is completely enclosed, and we hear your voice from inside there. It's amplified. How does that work in the play? That sound booth.
Basically, I mean that's a cell, a jail cell. It's also a window through which a victim can look at a lineup of criminals. It's also a canvas on which a painter can make a painting. So it symbolizes lots of things.
What do you hope that audiences will take away from the play?
I think that there's still a lot of shame around the topic of rape, and it's such a common, unfortunately, crime. And there's still a lot of shame around speaking about it. So even if people just take away the sense that the silence has been broken, that's enough for me. Even if that's all they take away, that's enough.
You've been listening to Red Eye, a program produced by an alternative media collective in Vancouver, Canada. Red Eye broadcasts live every Saturday morning from 9 until noon and can be heard around the world at cooperadio.org.